How are you feeling today? Would you characterize your overall state as happy? It's pretty important to us, and not just at this moment in history. Think back a bit to the Declaration of Independence. Right there in one of our founding documents, nearly 250 years old, there's a reference to the right to the pursuit of happiness. Modern scientists in several fields try to figure out what makes people happy, using just a few more tools than ancient philosophers used in the same quest. Today's guest considers our thinking about happiness both now and then. Frederic Lenoir's book is Happiness, A Philosopher's Guide. Frederic Lenoir is himself a philosopher, sociologist, and religious historian. He's also a prolific author, and his works, from essays to novels, have been translated into more than 20 languages from his native French. And he's a radio person himself, producing and hosting a weekly show on religion and philosophy. Frederic Lenoir joins us by phone from Paris. Frederic, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hello, Jeff. Thanks so much for inviting me. And please be patient and speak slowly with me, because I just started learning English 6 months ago, so it's difficult by phone.
Understood. All right, because you can't see facial expressions and all of that.
That's right. But I'm sure you will help me. And also, you like to say that in Paris today, also the weather was very beautiful. It was the first warm day in Paris.
Thank you so much for sharing that with us. It's always good to have a little comparison with how we're doing compared to the other cities around the world. Frederic, you write in this book that you thought about a book on happiness for a long time. What were some of the obstacles that kept you from completing it?
Because today, modern philosophers, don't like to speak about happiness. They think it's a very complex matter. And most of them, they prefer to speak about language, about technical problems. But happiness is too complex, and they said, oh, it's a question for the past. And I don't agree with that, because I think it's very complex, very difficult, but it's very interesting to compare what the ancient philosophers, like the Greek philosophers, Epicurus, Aristotle, Plato, and others, and also some modern philosophers like Spinoza or Schopenhauer, what they said about happiness, and to compare their thoughts to cognitive science and to psychology. Because today, cognitive science and psychology are trying to explain happiness. And sometimes it's very interesting to make the comparison between ancient philosophers and what they now, psychology and cognitive science. And I try in this book to blend all those knowledge. And it was the first time, I think, who someone tried to blend philosophy, psychology, sociology, history, and cognitive science, and also philosophy from the East and for philosophy from the West, because it's very interesting to compare what the Buddha said and also what the Taoist philosopher said. And so that's why it takes a lot of time for me to make this book, to write this book, and try to make it accessible for everyone.
Frederic, one of the things I wondered as I got further into the book and looked at all of the cultures and all of the minds who have weighed in on the subject of happiness was whether you found any cultures that didn't place a particular emphasis on happiness, did not find happiness important.
I think happiness was very important in the ancient world. If you take the old cultures, like in China or in Greece, in Roman, you see that all the philosophers were in India, of course, all the philosophers were searching about happiness. It was a universal quest. And after, the change was with the Christianity, because during the whole time of the Christianity, the Middle Age and after the Renaissance, during more than 1,000 years, the question of happiness was not the first question. The question, the most important question in Christianity is a question of salvation, how to save my soul. And so the Christian said that if you are happy, it's okay, but it's not so important. What is more important is to do well to save your soul, and you will be happy after life, in the other life, in the kingdom. And so that's the reason why during a long, long time, happiness was not so important in the Western culture and also in the Islamic Arabs culture, because the Quran with Muhammad said exactly the same thing. The most important is the salvation. And it's a reason why for a long time we didn't speak about happiness. And happiness becomes, in modernity, to come back with Spinoza, with Montaigne, in the 16th and 18th and 17th century. And after, for one century, it was very interesting. You see that you have spoken about the Declaration of Independence, and America's founding father famously named the pursuit of happiness as one of the three unalienable rights. But it was the 18th century. And after, in the 19th century, I think that philosopher said that happiness is not so important. It's an old matter, as I told you. And also it was a romantic way of thinking, where people during the 19th century, the most intellectuals, they think that maybe it's better to be unhappy than happy. And they did it especially in Europe. And there are many romantic thinkers that said that if you are unhappy, if you feel sad, it's better for creation artistic. You will be a better compositor, better writer, better poet. And they said, like Baudelaire, you know, spleen and sadness is better for creation. If you are happy, you will have nothing interesting to say to other people. And that's the reason why we didn't speak so much in 19th and 20th century about happiness. And it started again 50 years ago, maybe not 50, 40, 30 years ago, with Buddhism philosophy, with Eastern philosophers, with Greek philosophers. We read again the Greek philosophers, and people now are more searching for individual happiness.
All right, much more to talk about. The book is called Happiness, A Philosopher's Guide. Frédéric Lenoir is the author of it, and he's joining us by phone from Paris. We'll come back and talk more with him. And if you'd like to visit with us on the subject of happiness and how we pursue it and how we obtain it, join us on the Jefferson Exchange. Back with Frédéric Lenoir and you in a minute 30. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is the French philosopher, sociologist, and religious historian Frédéric Lenoir. He is also a prolific author, and his latest book, translated into English, is Happiness, A Philosopher's Guide, been out in a French edition and some other languages for a while now. And he joins us to use his newfound English on us as well. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about happiness at 800-838-3760 throughout the listening area. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Frédéric, you were just saying that about 30 or 40 years ago was when intellectuals snapped back into thinking about happiness, and you did mention Buddhists along the way, which raises the question about the shades here, whether, for example, happiness and contentment and satisfaction are all synonymous or whether there are some differences between those.
You mean the difference between Eastern philosophy, Buddhism, and Western culture?
Just the basic ideas of contentment versus happiness versus satisfaction, whether they are the same or
okay. Yeah. Okay. I think it's quite the same, but in a different way. Happiness is a full satisfaction. It means that it's not a short life satisfaction. You know, what will give us a short life satisfaction is pleasure. And the most important difference between pleasure and happiness is that pleasure is just a short-lived experience. You get pleasure when you get satisfaction from a need or desire. And you are happy because you feel good inside yourself. Happiness is a quest for balance, for harmony, for serenity. Happiness is an inner feeling, a durable and holistic state of being. So it's a satisfaction. There's no happiness without satisfaction, like pleasure. But it's a holistic and durable satisfaction because you love life. When you're happy, you love life, you accept, you agree with everything in life. You say, okay, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad, it's difficult. But I agree with that because inside myself, I feel well, I feel in peace. And that's the state of happiness. And you know, the first Greek philosophers like Epicurus and Aristotle, they created the concept of happiness. and they distinguish it to the concept of pleasure. And most of the time, people confuse pleasure, joy, and happiness. And it's three things different. Pleasure, I told you, is just a little experience, and you feel well for a short time, and it's necessary. We have many pleasures of the day, and I think one way to become truly happy is to have conscience, to be aware of all the little pleasures of every day. It's very important to be aware of all the little pleasures. But also, if you want to be truly happy, you have to give a meaning to your life. You have to make a work on yourself, to know oneself better, to have very good connection with people, to love other people, to be in altruism. And there are many other things that are very important to be happy, like a state of being and a full satisfaction, and not only a little satisfaction of the pleasure.
That sounds like a very Aristotle way of looking at things, though, that there needs to be a larger purpose to life than just being happy in the moment.
Yeah, of course, it's very important to focus on the moment. And for a long time, people said that we have to be happy, to build our lives and to make choices and to give a meaning. It's also very important. But I think the most important thing is to be aware and to focus in the moment, in the present time, and to try to do the best every minute, every day, and to be aware to all the little things. There's every day. There are very little pleasures, like to see a bird, to hear a song, to see someone you like, to listen to music you like, and to take the coffee or the tea in the morning. All those little pleasures, most of the time, we are not aware. We don't take care because we are thinking about the past. We are thinking about the future. We are a little anxious. We are doing too many things in the same time. And I'm sure that one of the most important things to be happy is to focus on the present time. And what is very interesting is that all the old philosophers, like the Buddha or Aristotle, they said that. They said, if you want to be happy, live in the present moment. And we can now understand that also with the cognitive science, because scientists made experiences on person, and some person they were very focusing on the present time and the other not. And the difference is that when you are focusing on the present moment, your brain will release chemical substances like dopamine or serotonin, which produce well-being. And so we can understand now by cognitive science the explanation that when you are focusing on the present moment, when you are aware of all the little experience you are doing, then you will feel better.
We have mentioned Aristotle and Epicurus a couple of times. They are mentioned in the same chapter in your book. A lot of people, you think, have the wrong idea about Epicurus, from whom we draw the term Epicurean. What was his real view about the pleasures of the body and the moment?
Yeah, because most of people think that Epicurus was the philosopher of pleasure, and they say, oh, it's the philosopher of pleasure, so they think that pleasure is the most important thing you can have in life, and the most of pleasure will be better. And then more and more you will have pleasure, more and more you will be happy. And it's exactly the opposite of the thought of Epicurus, because, of course, Epicurus said something very important, because some disciples of Plato said that if you want to be happy, it's better to have no pleasure, because pleasure is dangerous. And Epicurus said it's stupid. There is no happiness without pleasure. Pleasure is absolutely necessary to give you satisfaction in life. But he said something very important. He said you have to moderate pleasure. You have to find with your reason what is good pleasure for you, what is a bad pleasure. And you have to select the pleasure and to moderate the pleasure. So Epicurus is not the philosopher of the most pleasure. He's the philosopher of the quality of the pleasure. You have to find the quality and not the quantity.
So he was not a hedonist in the sense that it was just about pleasure, nothing else.
No. And so he created, I told you before, with Aristotle, really the concept of happiness distinguished to the concept of pleasure, because he said that if you want to be happy, you have to select pleasure, you have to you have to discern the good pleasure and to live them in moderation.
So we had already talked about the Christian and the Muslim traditions, which thought, at least originally, in terms of happiness in the next life, that you're good and dutiful and a good, virtuous person on earth now, but that your happiness will come in the next life, which makes me curious to wonder what Aristotle and Epicurus back in ancient Greece thought about happiness and pleasure in the context of religion and gods.
So Epicurus and Aristotle disagreed with other philosophers that said that happiness is not the most important thing in this life. For Epicurus and Aristotle, the most important thing you have to search in this life is happiness. You have to search for the full satisfaction, and for that, you have to be virtuous, you have to be reasonable, you have to find the correct pleasure. So it's a philosophical life. It's not so easy to be happy, but they think like that. And the most important philosopher who was not agree with them, but he lived before them, is Socrates. Socrates said that happiness is not the most important thing. He said that to have a good life, to practice the good, to search for the truth, is more important than to search for happiness. And Socrates said to his disciples that he prefers to suffer in this life and to practice justice and love, and then he knew that he will be very happy in the next life. He believed in the next life, and he said at the end of his life, I don't want to escape, I don't want to go out and to be happy for a long time. I prefer to suffer and to die, because I know I have to do it. I always say that I have to follow the rules of the city, even if sometimes the rules are not good, and I want to be coherent with myself, and so it's better to do that. So for Socrates, happiness is not the most important thing in this life. It's the most important thing if you believe in other life after this one. And Jesus said exactly the same thing. It's really interesting to compare Jesus and Socrates, because also Jesus, he lacked happiness. He was happy many times, and at the end of his life, when he has to choose, he preferred to die and to suffer, because he knew that it was what he had to do if he want to be coherent, to go in his way, in the way that he decided to do. And he said that we will be happy, the most happy we will be in the kingdom of heaven. But he said to his disciples, I don't promise you that you will be happy on this earth. And that's the main opposition. You have Socrates and Jesus on one hand, and on the other hand, you have Aristotle and Epicurus.
Hey, very interesting stuff to think about. It's all in Frederick Lenoir's book, Happiness, A Philosopher's Guide. He is the author, a philosopher, sociologist, religious historian, based in France. And you can join our discussion about Happiness, A Philosopher's Guide, here on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 around the region. And you can send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. So the part about Socrates and Jesus, in a sense, being happy to give up their lives probably stretched my mind more than any other part of this book, just in the sense of they were aware of potentially having happiness by knowing they had done the right thing, so they might not have been happy in the moment, but they were confident they would be happy because of what they were doing in the moment, even though it hurt.
Of course. You're right. I think they were not happy during the time they suffer, but they were sure that after they will be much more happy than if they escape. And you can see that with Jesus. When he's in the Mount of Olives, just before the capture by the soldiers, he was so anxious. It was terrible for him. And he prayed his father and say, I don't want, it's too difficult, it will be terrible. And after, he agreed. And I think it was so much suffering, it was a big fight. And then he knew that it will be better, and he knew that he will feel much happier because after he did the right things. But during the time, he will suffer. I think We can't say that he was happy. It was terrible. The passion of the priest was something terrible. And the happiness is before and after. But show that when you do the right, when you do something you think it's well, you know that you will be happier after. And I'm sure also you know that you will make people happy. And it's very important. And I give another example. Nelson Mandela. He spent so many years in jail. And when he did that, when he was fighting for the right of black people in South Africa, and he knew that it was a very difficult fight and he will suffer and he will be in jail for a long time, I'm sure he was not always happy in jail. It was most of the time very difficult. But also he said that he was happy to know that his suffering was helping other people and was good for the justice.
Well, you know, I noticed, too, that there's, for example, there is a brief note in here about St. Augustine and a treatise on happiness. The Happy Life is the English version of this, which begs the question. I mean, saints are often saints because they were martyred. So here again, it's people who could see better things down the road, but not necessarily within their own lives, and yet could envision happiness.
Sorry, can you repeat the question?
It wasn't so much a question as a statement.
The, end.
the idea being that saints and martyrs, I mean, we've already talked about Jesus and Socrates and the rough times they had to go through in the hope that they would be happy somewhere else other than on earth. But the idea that you have many people, Nelson Mandela, the other example, who could see happiness for someone else, perhaps, for his people, for himself eventually, but through a lot of suffering in the short term.
Yeah, of course, it's a choice. The most important question while you are searching happiness is the connection with others. I think that's something very important. And if you decide in your life to give the meaning of to help other people and to try to make this world better and to fight for justice and to help people who need it and there are so many things to do to make this world better, I think you choose a collective happiness. You decide to fight, to live, for the main reason that you will make the world better. And in that case, that there are many people who do like that, not so much, but there are many. In that case, I think you will be happy to do something good, to do something that can be helpful for others. But I'm sure also that you will have also many, many moments where it will be difficult because you have not a comfortable life. You decide to fight. You will have many opposition. And I'm sure it's a difficult way, but it can produce happiness because you decide to help other people and to help the world.
All right, so let's shift from the very heavy thoughts about happiness eventually to happiness now for some people. And you have a section here about Voltaire and his concept of the happy idiot. What did he mean by that?
It's Voltaire. Voltaire said that he has seen many people who were very happy, but very idiot, you know. And he said the question, a very interesting question, what is better? Is it better to be idiot and happy? Or is it better to be clever and unhappy? So, of course, it's like a joke because I think you can be clever and happy. But for Voltaire, it's a question. He said that some people, if they ask too many questions, if they try to find the truth, if they are too clever, they will be unhappy. And he said, what is better for those people? Is it better to know not too many things, and then to be happy because they have just a good life and they have good friends and they like their life, but they don't ask any question about what happened in the next, what happened in other countries. And so they're just living with, closed eyes. And he said, what is better? Is it better for them to stay like that without knowledge? Or is it better to know a lot of things and then it's much difficult to be happier? To be happy. And I think the question is right, because more you know about yourself, more you know about the world, more you are searching the truth, more it's difficult to be truly happy, because you discover that the world is so difficult and there are yourself, inside yourself, everything is not perfect, and there's a lot of things you have to move. And so when you try to make a philosophical or psychological work on yourself, it's a long journey. And then I'm sure that you will be deeply, really, truly happy when you will do it. But it will take a long time. And if you don't do it, maybe you can be happy for a short time. And if something very difficult happens, if you have a hardship or something you can't imagine, maybe you will be unhappy for a long time. So it's a decision we have to take. If you want to work on ourselves to be truly happy, or if we prefer not to ask too many questions, not to know too many things, and stay like we are, and maybe it will be difficult.
The point being, I think that, that any life takes some examination to be truly fulfilled and happy. We'll come back to that concept with Frédéric Lenoir. He's the author of Happiness, A Philosopher's Guide, now out in English for the first time. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange when we come back from this break. Back with Frédéric Lenoir and you in a minute 30. It's the final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is the French philosopher, sociologist, and religious historian Frédéric Lenoir. He's also a radio personality himself. He's written many books, including one just translated into English, known by the title Happiness, A Philosopher's Guide. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about thoughts about happiness and how to achieve it at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area, by email jx@jeffnet.org. So as we think about the idea of the happy idiot and the general sense, there seems to be general agreement among philosophers now and then that there requires some thinking here. I mean, does this mean we really have to spend some time thinking about what makes us happy and not just let it come to us?
Yeah, that's a philosophical way of thinking happiness, because of course, if you don't think about happiness, you can be happy if you are lucky. And that's one very important point we didn't discuss. It's a part of luck in happiness. And you know the word in Greek, eudaimonia, means two things. First, to have a good diamond. And today we'll say God is on your side, to have good karma, and scientists will say to have good genes. And eudaimonia also means to be in harmony with your inner being. And I think that those two meanings show that happiness has something to do with luck and something to do with inner peace of the soul, which depends on us. So half of the equation of happiness is predetermined, and the other half depends on us, on our free will. And Aristotle was also the first philosopher who explained that. And he underlined the crucial point that individual's capacity for happiness has, he said, three factors. First and least influential are exterior conditions, like family, society, culture, money. And second, and to a larger extent, is luck, how our lucky star, our divine providence, he said, that gave us a good nature. We say today, good genes. And third, our practice, knowledge, spiritual exercise, virtues, behavior. And what is very interesting is that today, the professor Sondia Lyubomirsky from the University of California say exactly the same thing. She explains that happiness depends 10% on external condition, 50% on genetics, and 40% on our voluntary activities. And it's very interesting to compare what Aristotle said and then this professor today. It's exactly the same. And it's the reason why, of course, some people, they are naturally happy because they are very good genes, they are very optimistic, they always see the good things of life. And so for them, it's natural to be joyful, to be happy. But for other people, it's very difficult because they are more pessimistic, maybe they had a problems in the childhood, and they are looking things with always difficulties, and For those people, it's important to ask questions. It's important to search happiness and then to work on themselves and to go in therapy or to practice meditation or to do something that can be helpful for them. And it's the reason why I think it's very useful for most people to think about happiness and to read some book about happiness because it can be useful for them.
Let us take a call. We have Connie in Central Point. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Frederic Lenoir. His book is Happiness, A Philosopher's Guide. Hi, Connie.
Hey, thank you so much for the fascinating conversation. When you mentioned that happiness has only become a rising philosophy in the last 30 or 40 years, it made me think there's something else that's become a rising philosophy at the same time, which is capitalism. But if and consumerism, which is 100% externally focused. And I think, just speaking for our own society, a lot of people believe that that society is proposing happiness when actually it's only proposing pleasure, because if you actually reached happiness, you wouldn't be buying things. But if you're constantly seeking pleasure, which is a momentary thing, you'll never get there, so you'll keep buying.
All right. Good thoughts. We'll take it from there. Thanks so much, Connie. Appreciate that. So, Frederick, can we buy our way to happiness?
I totally agree with what you said. Totally agree. I think in our world, we think that we'll be happy only by buying things and only to have success and to be richer. Of course, money is useful. It helps you to be more comfortable. It gives you more freedom to do what you like. But at the same time, I'm sure that money is not sufficient to bring you lasting happiness. For that, you need love. You need an activity that brings you joy. You need decent health, and you need inner peace. And happiness, is, I told you, is a state of being. It does not depend on exteriors. And that's what the old philosophers said. If you take Epicurus, Aristotle, the Buddha, Lao Tzu, they all said you can have very few things and be very happy because you have to find happiness inside yourself. And then you will be happy everywhere and whatever happens. And may I tell you a short story to give an example?
Yeah.
I love this story. It's a story of a man, a foreigner, who arrives in a new city. And he doesn't know anyone in the city, and he saw an old man sitting near the front of the door of the city, and he asked this man, "Tell me, old man, how are people in this city? Are they kind or difficult?" And the old man asked him, "How were the people in the city you left?" And then the stranger said, "Oh, they were terrible, very difficult, and it's the reason why I left." And the old man say, "Here, it's the same." And just after, 10 minutes after, came another foreigner. And he asked the same question to the old man. "How are the people in this city?" And the old man asked the same question. "How were the people in the city you live?" And then the man said, "Oh, very kind, very good, very nice people." And the old man said, "Here, it's the same." And then there's a merchant who listened to the conversation, and he comes to the old man and says, "You are lying. How can people be good or not good in the same time in this city?" And the old man say, "It doesn't matter. What is important is how you feel inside yourself. And if you are happy somewhere, you will be happy everywhere. If you are unhappy somewhere, you will be unhappy everywhere."
That's a really illuminating story, which raises the question then, if there are people who, and there's a whole chapter in the book called "Does Every Human Being Wish to Be Happy?" If there are people who seem to be directing their energies to being grumpy, are they in fact actually deriving some pleasure from that practice, even though it's not true happiness in the sense that the rest of us would understand it?
Of course, but they have to know that. I think actually most people are more searching for pleasure than happiness. It's exactly what the person said before by phone. It's exactly that. Most people confuse happiness and pleasure, and they are searching to have more and more pleasures by external things, by success. And if they chose, they can be happy for a time. But if tomorrow they lose their job, they will be very unhappy. If tomorrow they don't have any more money, they will be very unhappy. If tomorrow they have a sickness, a problem with their health, they will be very unhappy. So the quest of pleasure can give you for a certain time happiness, but not for a durable time. And then that's the reason why some other people, they try to find happiness inside themselves and not by external factors. And when you find happiness inside yourself, and then whatever happened in life, you will feel better.
I wonder, Frederick, if you got into much discussion of ages in life at which you feel happy. I've seen a number of surveys that indicate that people report feeling happier as they get older and they're done with things like the rigors of raising children and stuff like that. And it also seems like younger people, perhaps certainly in American culture, the ones who might be most likely to mock people who are trying to be happy. I mean, have you find an age at which people seem to be really good at being happy and likewise an age at which they're really bad at being happy?
It's very general. So we can say statistics. And it will be true for the whole, but not for each individual. So the statistics, the surveys show us that for the majority of people, happiness, they are more happy between 50 and 70 years old. And the reason is that after 50, they know them better. They know themselves better. They had good experience of life. They know what is good for them, what is bad for them, and also maybe they had a success. They have a good realization in the world, so they can enjoy life better. And before, it's difficult because you discover life, you have problems. Sometimes you get divorced, or you try to find a good job for you. And after, the majority of people they enjoy better life between 50 and 70. And after 70, when they become older, there's a little less happiness because of the sickness, because friends died, and life is a little more difficult for the majority of people. But of course, there are many exceptions. And I will say that that's also interesting to point out the fact that if you want to be happy, you have to know yourself better. And there are two main philosophers and psychologists who said that. There are Spinoza, the Dutch philosopher, and Carl Gustav Jung, the psychologist, Swiss psychologist. And Jung is speaking about the process of individualization. And he explained that for the first part of our life, we don't know ourselves good. We just we are doing because the family, the culture, the influence of the society tell us to do that. And then after 30, 35 years, we start to think better, to know ourselves better, and to make a work on ourselves. And at that age, between 35 and 50 years, many people change their life and change their view on the life. And then it's a very important time to move, to change, and to discover what is really good for you, what is really bad for you. And Spinoza, before Jung, 3 centuries before, said exactly the same thing. He said you have to work on yourself. You have to know you better. You have to discern with the reason what is really good for you, what is really bad for you, and then you will be happier.
Well, then it seems to me that the scale we talked about that the University of California professor developed, you know, where 10% of your happiness comes from external sources, 50% luck, and 40% practice, those numbers should actually shift over the course of a life, if you're thinking about it in these terms, because you realize by the time you reach age 40 or 50, and I think we both have, that you can figure out the things to avoid, the externalities that don't have to affect you anymore, and then practice becomes a larger part of what you're doing. So it can actually extend beyond the 40%.
I'm not sure I understand well, but if I understand well your question, it means that if you start to work on yourself and to try to be happier, it happens most of the time in the middle of the life and not at the beginning. And then it's at that time that the majority of people try, in the 40%, they try to move. But of course, there are also people younger who decide to work on themselves and to do a good thing for them. It's just what I tell you is just a statistic. It's a majority. But some people, when they are teenagers, they know them good. They know what they want to do. If they are artists, they know that they have to be an artist and not to work in the financial district. And if they want to work in the financial district because they are done for that, they will do it. And so it's not, of course, all the people who will start to work on themselves in the middle age. It's just the majority. But for some other people, when they are very young, they know what they want to do, and they make the good choice, and they found a good family, and they knew that it was the best way for them. So it depends on people.
All right. I guess the point I was trying to make is that as you get older, you are better able to figure out what it is that makes you happy, so the practice becomes a larger portion of what contributes to your happiness. You find what makes you happy, I think, as you get older, better.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. When you get older, and it's also my own experience, because when I was young, I was not so happy. It's the reason why I was so interesting about happiness.
Sure.
Because, you know, people who are very happy, they don't think about happiness. It's not a problem. It's not a question. It's a fact. And for me, it was a question, because when I was a teenager, I asked me many questions. How to be happier? How to feel better inside myself? And it's the reason why I read philosophers. I was also learned learn to meditate. I went to therapy. And at the end, I got to know and love myself better. And then step by step, I became truly happy. But it starts when I was young, and it takes many years. And I can say that for me and for many people, happiness is a long journey, but it's really very exciting to do it.
Certainly worth the effort. And I have pointed out before, the book is small in stature, but large in weight. Happiness, A Philosopher's Guide. Frédéric Lenoir wrote it and joined us today in the exchange. Frédéric, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Jeff. It was a great pleasure to speak with you.
Pleasure here, too. Take care.